Welcome to Digital Marketing That Puts People First, brought to you by The Online Co., where we believe the best way to help businesses grow is to do exactly that, put people first. This is season 3 of the podcast where we discuss marketing with senior marketing leaders, chief marketing officers from around Australia. I'm James Palmwell, and in this episode, we have Mike Jeffrey. Mike was the Director of Marketing, Communications and Fundraising for Wesley Mission Queensland, or WMQ, for 10 years. WMQ is a large not-for-profit with over 3,000 employees and over 2,400 volunteers. WMQ works in aged care, retirement living, community care, and dozens of related areas. In 2021, Mike finished up with WMQ and became the CEO of a tech startup called Plus Communities. Plus Communities is a customizable app that brings communities together in the aged care and retirement living space. Mike has been working for, in, and with community organizations for the past 30 years. He has a passion for helping those in need, regardless of socioeconomic status, age, and circumstances. As CEO at Plus Communities, he gets to be deeply embedded in helping communities do community better through the software they use to connect, engage, and manage their members. But the outcomes are the same. Lives are changed and communities thrive. Mike has an impressive background at both the grassroots and executive level. He's worked as a youth worker, educator, content writer, event organizer, public speaker, community organizer, fundraiser, marketer, lecturer, business development and product manager. He's also held senior executive roles in marketing, fundraising, communications, customer sales and general community services management. Mike Jeffrey, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much, James.
There's a lot there, mate. You've done a lot of things.
Yeah, hearing it all at once, it's a bit of a reminder. Gosh, I have been busy and I'm getting older.
Yes, aren't we all? Let's talk about marketing. When did you get started in marketing and what attracted you to it?
Yeah, so this is, for me, I really got clued into marketing. I did an MBA in the mid-2000s. And had an opportunity to specialize and choose a specialization, and I chose marketing. And one of the reasons that I did that was that when I thought back about the previous 10 years and the work that I was doing, even though I had different job titles, you know, youth worker, educator, community services manager, a lot of what I was doing or that I was interested in was marketing. You know, I was running an event, so then how do I get a whole bunch of people to attend that event? I'm developing products. How am I going to sell that product and promote that product so that people buy it? You know, I'm developing curriculum. How am I going to make sure that people can understand it, use it? So a lot of the day-to-day work that I was doing was marketing, even though my job title was something different.
Okay, and you're doing a lot of things in the not-for-profit space and in care type of organisations. Yeah. So you're obviously exposed to a lot of people in that process. Was it the marketing part of your role that particularly sort of stimulated you and interested you, or was there something else? You know, was it the care side and the marketing supported that?
I think when you are focused on supporting people in need, you're trying to understand what it is that's going on for them, what their needs are, how I can help. And often I ended up in a role where I'm working with lots of people trying to connect with those people in need. And so when you've got responsibilities about for the organization, you're thinking about what's unique about who you are, what story, what's your identity as an organization, how do you communicate that, how do you connect that to people in need and solve that problem for people? Or in my case, if I'm not in a frontline caring capacity, then how do I help those people who are on the front line to tell their stories, to communicate the passion that they have, the love that they have for the people that they work with, and help connect them with others.
Right. So, I mean, there's this theme here around communication and helping people understand. So this is the general public understand what you do.
Yeah.
And you mentioned stories as well. Tell me how you take these organizations and then you translate, like you got all these people, and then you translate that into something like understandable for the public.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, and I think for a marketer, particularly at a CMO level, you take on responsibility for the identity of the organization. Who are we? What do we want on about? What's special about us? What's unique? Why are we valuable to others? What's our point of difference? And you're trying to capture that on behalf of all of your stakeholders and communicate that back to people. And I think understanding what that is really, really important. And it's easy to kind of get lost in what that means. But I think, you know, even if you are running a small business and there's three of you, then you have a product that you're trying to sell. You need to understand what's significant or unique or special about that. Then you've got to understand, well, who are the buyers for that product? What are their needs? What's important to them? And how do you connect those two things together? And that is true in a large organization and in a small organization. And in marketing, it's your role to connect those things.
So that function of taking what the organization does and communicating it to the wider public is the same whether you're 3 or 3,000. Yeah, and you've got to take the time to understand the customer. And I mean, I guess we spend a lot of time talking about that because I guess you will have some stakeholders going, we need leads, we need sales, we need fundraising, we need money. And I don't want to poo-poo that because the organization does, right? It needs finance to run. But if you don't put person at the end of the process, the customer first, you don't get the finance.
That's exactly it. You've got to really have a clear understanding of what their needs are, that customer, if you're ever going to connect with them and you're ever going to have something valuable to that they want to buy.
Yeah,
I think that next step in terms of, you know, in a large organization, you've got managers and directors and executives who are concerned, you know, I've got a budget, I need to deliver on my sales targets. How are you going to help me do that? Well, then you can't, once you know those two things, you can move to that next step. Okay, well, let's figure that out. You can jump into the metrics and work out the total number of customers that you need and the leads you're going to have to generate in order to achieve those targets. So, but you can't do that with any success without knowing the answer to the first two questions.
So you talked about the customer's needs and in WMQ and also in Plus Communities, you're in the same industry, just quite different roles. And I definitely want to pick that apart, but, you understand their needs, right? How have you gone about that? Is it just sort of a function of you starting at grassroots as a youth worker and actually doing it and growing through? Or did you interview people within the organization to see what their experiences were? What did that look like?
Yeah, it is all of those things. You can do all of the formal research in developing out your understanding of who your buyers, who your customers are, and doing those surveys and building out your buyer personas and what jobs do they have to be done, and developing a whole spreadsheet of data that you want to collect. And then you can interview those people and then make sure that the assumptions that you've made from talking with staff match the reality in terms of what customers are actually telling you. But at the end of the day, even with that information, it doesn't mean that everyone is telling the truth or that that's actually real. Because, you know, without the experimentation and the discovery of actually testing, trialing, you can still come unstuck. because they make a decision to purchase based on something that you haven't yet surfaced. And that's really important to get to.
Yes, those underlying factors. So I guess there's always a tension between planning and execution, that there's a level of planning that you can do and should do. But you really don't start learning till you hit the ground and you're actually out there doing whichever tactic you're choosing.
Yeah.
And getting real-time feedback about whether it works or not.
Yeah.
And the classic mistake is to make a whole bunch of assumptions about your target market. Go out, you know, big budgets and find out one of those assumptions was wrong.
And blow it all very quickly. Make a lot of people unhappy.
Yeah, and the marketing textbooks are just filled with these stories. I mean, the new Coke story from the early 80s, Coke did all these surveys and decided that this new flavor was preferred and they launched it. And it was one of the most spectacular marketing failures in history. Coke got it wrong. So let's not pretend it's easy, but
yeah.
You need to, I guess what we're saying is you need to do 50% planning and then just get stuck into it and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a small business, we talked about small businesses with three people, will have customers. But a large business, you know, there's 3,000 staff and, 2,400 plus volunteers. You've got 5,400 audience members as well, but they're not the public. They're your people.
Yeah.
And they're potentially customers, but they're also invested in what it is the organization is saying. In terms of do they like it or don't they like it? I imagine there could be 5,400 opinions on the homepage of the website.
That is so true. And I think it's more true than a range of other specialities because we're so immersed in brands, social media. We have an experience and we all have a personal opinion about what looks good or doesn't look good or how to express something in a certain way. So how do you balance the insights and expertise of the manager and the service director versus the insights and expertise of the content specialist or the marketing copywriter, for example?
Yeah.
And how do you prioritize those? Yeah, stakeholder management, I think, for a CMO or an executive is a big chunk of what you need to do and figuring out which battles you need to win and which ones you are happy to lose, you know.
Yes.
Because, like you said, in terms of assumptions that we make or which strategy is going to work, the results speak for themselves. And sometimes the best way to figure out whether your particular expert advice is more important than the manager that you are trying to deliver for is by testing the messaging, testing the imagery, the branding, and seeing what works. Because at the end of the day, in a large organization with 5,000, you know, key stakeholders, those opinions are important, but actually it's the customer's opinion and decision that's even more important.
Yeah.
So we can have an opinion, but doesn't really matter. Because if those customers are not converting in a way that's meaningful or useful to the organization, then you've got a problem. And as a collective group of individuals, you've got to figure that out.
Yeah, right. So you could be talking to a manager, I don't know, in community care who has a team going out and seeing people and they're identifying issues and having some very grassroots discussions. Yeah. And you probably want that feedback. That's helpful. But the flip side is, and I mean, we had this discussion with a client once where they were very caught up on the images on the homepage, whether they had square edges or round edges. It was a big deal. You can have 5,400 people with those sorts of opinions. It's like, it's not helpful.
Yeah.
So when I started the podcast, we talk about digital marketing that puts people first. This is really what we're coming at, isn't it? It's the customer first. The customer has to come first in all of our marketing. Is that something you've experienced through your career?
Yeah, I think this thing about customer first, particularly in care organizations and services, is that you see it, and I certainly saw it in a range of contexts where, you know, you have a carer working in an aged care home and you see the way that they connect with the person in at such a deep level, in the way that they make eye contact, the smiles, that sense of empathy, the warmth in their voice, and that deep level of relationship that they have developed. And really at a micro level, each and every time that staff person delivers that kind of interaction, they're putting that customer and their needs first, and they're bending over backwards to deliver that. In my context today, that relationship with the customer in a B2B SaaS world is still just as important. My ability to, with existing customers, build that trust and grow that relationship. And an example of that for me is that we went through a tender process with a really big customer last year. And they reviewed a whole bunch of platforms and chose us, partly because of what we offered in terms of the product. But for them, there were two other things that were really important. One was trust, that we said and talked about our product that was honest. Yes. You know, when they reviewed our product, yes, it matched up with what I said. And the second thing is that they wanted to work with an organization that they could develop a partnership with for the long term. Because the relationship, the day-to-day of that relationship was really important. And I think in terms of putting customers first, each and every day with that customer now, I've got to make sure that I'm delivering on what I say I'm going to do, that our organization is delivering on what we say we're going to do. Or, and if we get it wrong, that we're quick to apologize, that we don't hide things because it's a relationship. And all of those things in our lives about, we know when we're doing a relationship well and when we're doing it badly.
Yes.
And, you know, we're not getting back to people on emails, or we're not being honest, or we're saying, you know, we're over-promising and under-delivering. And with customers, it's exactly the same.
Yep.
And whether that's in a care where you're frontline delivering care to a vulnerable person and dealing with their family, if you make a mistake, they need to know it. Transparency and trust is 100% important. So all of that wraps up into putting a person first and thinking about their needs and how you support them rather than your own needs.
Right. You're really talking about values there. There's a whole bunch of values underpinning that. So WMQ has values, and Plus Community had values. And I don't know that people draw the connection between marketing and values very often. Because what we do talk about is points of difference.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that I do differently? And I do wonder if potentially, if you've got four values, four of those points of difference should be those four values. You know, this is what we stand for. This is what we believe in. One of ours is partnership. And so when we're bringing in new clients, we're always assessing them. Are these guys partners, or are they just looking for a service, you know, or is it some quick turnaround? So we are looking for long-term partners because we know that's where we do our best work. And, they're also generally terrific people to work with. So then that comes out in the marketing, and then it comes out in the, you know, the ongoing service and how we behave and you know, assessing whether we're performing or not. And it links back to your, you know, the marketing and comms with your, you know, your staff of 5,500 people, that you're representing the organization on a values level as well. Because if you're nobody else is actually doing that. Like the accounts department aren't communicating values, and the, you know, the sales department, it's the marketing guys that will put their hand up and say, this is what we stand for. You know, your identity. How did that work? You know, what are the values of WMQ and Plus Communities, and how did that work?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things when I was at Wesley Mission Queensland. I had an opportunity to jump into our values, and as an executive, you're seeking to understand what our values are and how we live those out. And WMQ does have a really great program in terms of reinforcing values, and they're called the Wesley Charter, and running days with cross sections of staff from across the organization in terms of understanding what our values are, where they come from, how does that impact the way that we work, and the difference that we make in people's lives in terms of our customers, and reinforcing that and thinking that through across the whole organization. And I think that's understanding your values and how that translates to how you work is so critical, because it's part of your identity, understanding who we are, the ways that we work, how we treat each other, and how we relate to the people in need that we support and work with. And I think, you know, that all organizations will have values. They'll do a better job, for better or worse, in terms of living those out. And it won't necessarily be, you know, everyone seeks to generate a great customer experience, put people first. And, you know, it's not consistently easy to do. And it's not the only reason that people will buy your product or service. But if you don't have that nailed, you don't get the right to play, I think. Over the long term, because people just won't. They might buy you once, but they won't buy you twice. They certainly won't buy you three times. They're not. And I think we haven't talked about this yet, but for Wesley Mission Queensland and also Plus Communities, where that all translates is the kind of marketing strategies or tactics that actually work. And in a large care-focused organization, there are tight budgets, small margins, you're trying to deliver maximum value to people in need. So you want to give, you want to make sure that the outcomes are focused on service delivery. There's low overheads, low margins. And in a small business or in a startup capacity, you've got limited budgets. You don't have the capacity to spend a whole stack of money on branding or awareness campaigning. You've got to make sure that the product that you're delivering generates word of mouth referrals.
Yes.
And the only way you're going to do that is when people love your product and they love you and they love working with you. They value, they want you to succeed as much as you do. And so they're prepared to go on a journey with you. And both of those require, in a large organization delivering care or a small startup company, you have to be able to put people first, because that will lead to your customers talking about you and referring you to others.
Yeah, it's a terrific point. I talk to people sometimes who say something like, oh, we don't do marketing, we just do word of mouth. And I'm like, that is marketing. Yeah. In fact, it's the oldest form, it's the best form. It always will be. Now, everything else can support that. But essentially what you're saying is that my product and my service needs to be good enough that people talk about me.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a great experience. Plus Community is so helpful. And they're talking to somebody else and going, oh, it's made such a difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no better marketing than that.
Exactly. Recently I was talking with a potential customer who was a warm introduction, a warm referral from somebody who was familiar. And this person had already done their research, had spoken to others using our product, and had really positive things to say. And I, well, now sitting in a sales context, well, I'm in a good position. They know who I am. I've been introduced by somebody they trust, and they've already done their research. So when I do get to talk about our uniqueness or what's special, there's already a level of credibility and trust. And that's not because I was running a massively successful advertising campaign or, you know, had my brand looking amazing and my website, the whether I'd chosen round edges or sharp edges on those photos, or the best messaging. It's just making sure that I've got a good product, that I'm trustworthy. And if I'm going to spend some money, how do I support, augment, and wrap around things that are going to support and reinforce that word of mouth referral, that trust, increase that brand awareness, and slowly ripple out.
I think it was my first lecture at uni when I was studying marketing. They taught us about the four P's. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, because one of them's promotion. That's what I thought marketing was. And I think that's what most people think it is promotion's one P. The place, which is sort of distribution, where can I buy it? Price is another one. And then product. Hello. You know, if my product is good, better, or superior, it will sell itself. All the others are important. Like, it's not, I'm not discounting the others, but I guess we forget that we should offer something that's unique or superior or better or different. And that itself is marketing.
Exactly. And if you've got something, figuring out who your market is that your product is unique or valuable or special to, because it's incredibly hard to compete with everyone. And there's only a certain number of people who are going to choose you and your product. Right.
And there's a lot of wisdom just in that simple statement, Mike, that, I mean, if you're trying to market to everyone, you're almost certainly marketing to no one. You have to make your message so bland and unappealing to appeal to everyone. So you might as well choose the people you're going to market to and get specific. And that rules people in and out. And it's fine because there's loads of other companies that'll pick up the people you're not marketing to that, you know, no one's missing out. You're just choosing the people that you are going to work with.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a daily reminder for me. When you're running a company, you need to make sales, you've got budgets to make, and you can be overwhelmed or worried about what your competitors are doing or the fact that you didn't sign that particular organization. But then you get back to, well, how many customers do I actually need this year?
Yeah.
Who are they? Where are they going to come from? I don't need to own the entire market. I'm not going to. There's plenty of room for multiple products, and that the product that we have matches a certain need for a certain type of organization. It's not going to meet everyone's needs, but it's going to work with this particular set of customers who are trying to solve this particular set of problems. And I need to stay focused on that. And that removes a whole bunch of
noise.
Oh, yes, noise and overwhelm.
Yes.
And being disappointed when somebody doesn't choose me.
And it comes back to identity, doesn't it? This is our identity. This is who we are. This is our values. This is what we do.
Yes.
And I mean, for us, sometimes people go with another agency and I'm like, that's pretty good. They weren't a fit for us anyway.
Yeah.
On a number of levels. Now, tell me about the jump from director at WMQ, one of thousands of people, to CEO of a startup.
Yeah.
With not many people around. That's like, it must have been a massive mental gear shift.
Yeah, probably the big thing is that in a large organization, you have teams of people to work with, and you're a generalist rather than a specialist, and you're looking to employ people who are specialists to solve particular problems for the organization, and you're managing lots of stakeholders, you're focused on, you know, you get caught up in all sorts of other executive decisions, workplace health and safety, risk management.
Right.
And in a smaller organization, you are back to on the tools. There's no, you know, because you need to do, you need to grow the organization. You need to do the bits that you don't have somebody else to do. There is no, you can't, and you don't have the budget to go and employ somebody. So you've just got to figure out how you're going to get it done. So it's been quite a very satisfying, it's like getting back to the basics of, just the day-to-day of talking to customers.
Yep.
You know, creating some content for the website, writing a blog post. I'm not employing somebody to go and write all of that content. I'm doing it myself because I have skills, expertise. It's not too hard for me to do, because of my background. So I do the bits that I can do that are quite quick and easy to do. But it also means that you're not caught up in the larger politic of a large organization in managing a huge number of stakeholders and making sure that you're delivering for them as an internal corporate support service. You are grassroots. This is my business. I've got to deliver for our shareholders, and I've got to make sure that we are achieving the targets that we've set for ourselves. So it's very hands-on, it's very practical, and delivering a lot of outcomes, a lot less focused on managing large teams of staff or influencing large numbers of stakeholders in your organization.
And I imagine there's this feeling like, you know, the people on the Titanic were headed towards an iceberg, and moving that big ship just would have taken a whole stack of effort and convincing and time. And obviously it didn't move, right, in that example. Yeah. But if you're in a rowboat or a sailing boat with a handful of people, just turn and, you know, you just become so much more agile, skip the iceberg, but also jump onto opportunities. I mean, it just, you know, that freedom of not having to wrestle with all this stuff to make decisions and see progress. Moving from a slow-moving organization to a much faster-moving organization, was there a feeling of freedom and, you know, excitement and thrill?
Oh, totally. I've always been really motivated throughout my whole career, by two things. One is solving a problem. And the second is if you've solved a problem or turning an idea into a reality. Right. And in a large organization, the problems are much larger. They're more complex. They take a lot of time. And you've got to convince a lot of people to get there, or the problem is so big and so wicked that you can't solve it. It's got to manage it. In a startup in particular, you're so focused on solving one problem to begin with and wrapping out three or four additional problems for a customer, that as you learn about your customers and the problems that they have, you discover other opportunities and other problems that you are unaware of, that if you just make this small change, you can fix a bunch of other problems. And so you do move much more rapidly, and there is so much energy and motivation by being able to move quickly to deliver an outcome.
Yep.
particularly when you're in B2B SaaS, you're developing a product and you've got developers who, you know, you're constantly refining and developing that product roadmap based on feedback from customers. And the excitement you get, oh, wow, we can finally, you know, we can solve this problem now for those customers. Yes. And you do that. And they get really excited and then, okay, well, let's go and solve this next problem. And it's a very tangible improvement process.
The feedback's fast.
Yeah, exactly. And you get this chance to also jump way outside of what your customers are focused on right now to other things that they're not even aware of. And imagine, well, not only is it a problem, but here's an opportunity that that they might be really interested in that is not in the day-to-day, but is a big picture challenge for them.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying that. You know, as I speak to different businesses of all shapes and sizes, from corporates to small business, it's my observation that most businesses struggle with marketing. It's like, of all the functions in a business, it's the most kind of, it's the magic box. It's like this, the mystery box. Sorry, it's like it's a bit of art and creativity and graphic design, but it's also a bit of science and data and. But then there's this whole psychology part to it of understanding people, and there's this big tech side of, you know, be it programming in a particular language or building out campaigns and. You know, all that, and it's just like, and then people struggle. If you were to give advice to other marketers, maybe executive marketers like yourself or business owners who are wrestling with that, what would you say to them?
Yeah, there are really four things that stand out for me, and I've been talking about two of them over the last hour.
Yeah.
And the first one is about understanding what your product is, your uniqueness, what's special about you, really being clear on that. What problem is it that you're solving for all your customers that want to purchase from you? The second one is being really clear about who your buyer is and what their needs are. Because if you can understand who your buyer is, what their needs are, and why they would purchase from you, then and you know what they value about your product, then you can get into the tactics of marketing.
Yes.
If you don't know those two things, then you're never going to have any, doesn't matter what tactic you use, you're just going to come unstuck.
I'll jump in there. That's probably the number one mistake I see people is their tactic first, not people first. And what you're saying is that once you've understand, well, your product or service, and you understand your customer, the tactics then become obvious.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be the other way around. And people waste money and time because we need Google Ads or, you know, we need SEO or whatever it is when they haven't asked them.
Yeah, totally. So if you've got those two things, the next thing that I would do, that I do is just, okay, well, what are our targets? The metrics are really important, but if you need to make a certain number of sales over the next 12 months to make your business work, then how many customers does that translate to? And then, okay, well, how many leads do I need in order to convert into customers? And if I can figure out those two things, then you can start to deal with all of the other things about, like you said early on, in terms of the four P's, where's the best place to promote my product, and all of the strategies and tactics that I might need to use to connect my product with those potential buyers. And if I know my targets and my metrics, then I can start experimenting which strategies and tactics generate enough leads for me that lead to enough customers. And then if I've got something that's working, how do I decrease the cost of acquiring that customer and the decrease the cost of generating the leads in the first place?
There's a couple of really good points there, Mike, because one is, you know, to actually know the outcome you're looking for.
Yeah.
And when we're setting targets and metrics, it's very rare for me to meet someone that's done that. And it's year seven maths, so it's not about the complexity of it. You know, I need 10 sales. In order to get 10 sales, I need 30 leads. In order to get 30 leads, I need to be doing these activities.
Yes.
And then you're measuring. It's not complicated, but people typically don't know what they want. And that's the first bit. I just wonder if business owners should take an afternoon out of their business, go and sit under a tree, you know, or on the beach or something, and just think about, what is it that I want? And even if you set a goal and it's stupid, and I've set these just unrealistic, crazy, silly stuff, well, then you miss it by a mile and you go, all right, I'm going to set a better goal next year. I got some funny, I won't bore you with them, some funny stories of how badly I've missed it over, you know, setting goals over the years.
I think that's very true though, in terms of without that. And it is, you know, there's, in a startup context, there's all sorts of ways to set realistic goals in terms of growth rates. But for more mature businesses, I think you will have all of that past performance to go on. And you can, sometimes it's hard if you're not doing marketing yourself, or you don't have a lot of expertise, there's questions that you can ask of your marketing team that will be helpful for that.
Yeah, and then you've really put the tactics last in the process, which I think is terrific advice. One insight there is that when you're with WMQ, you're really dealing with a household name. I don't know if you ever did a survey of sort of brand recognition, but I imagine in Brisbane, what, 7, 8, 9 out of 10 people would have heard of WMQ. Yes. Like yes. Anglicare or Uniting, people have, there's only so many at that level. But like nobody's heard of, well, when you started, nobody had heard of Plus Communities because it didn't exist a few weeks ago. Yeah, it's a brand new brand. How do you tweak brand awareness versus lead gen in that smaller context?
Goes back to making sure that you have a product that people love and word of mouth referrals. So because a brand is partly about what you create, but it is in the eyes of the customer based on their experience with you. So regardless of the logo, the look and feel, it's their experience of your product. Does it actually solve a problem? Is it easy to use? Does it do what they need them to do? Is it priced in a way that's valuable to them compared to the competition? Are you trustworthy? All of those values come in and out in the way that you live out your brand.
Yeah.
How I present to customers when my community manager onboards staff, if she's friendly, approachable, enthusiastic, encouraging, that all is translating in terms of the brand. You can do a lot in your people, in how you live out your brand, regardless of how fancy your logo is or how consistent your colors are or that your messaging is perfect. Often in small organizations, you can mess around with trying to get that, your taglines and your website. You can turn yourself in knots in trying to get that right in the meantime. Yeah. You're not consistent in terms of how you're treating your customers and getting back to them on time. So I think your brand is how you live that out early on and as a small organization. And that word of mouth like I said in that story before, is people have heard of you. And you've got an introduction from somebody who already knows you, even though when that warm introduction is introducing you to somebody who's not heard of you before, but your brand is coming via another person.
Yeah, yeah, because they've touched and experienced your brand, so they're the carrier.
Yeah, so I think then, particularly in small organizations, you don't have a lot of money. Just get a brand, get enough sorted, make sure that it's good enough to begin with. Get some support from an agency to build that out for the first time and then leave it. Just get on with, you know, building a great product and connecting to your next best set of customers.
I feel like there's a myth out there that if you somehow get the perfect tagline, you're going to get an exponential growth in your business. And it's sort of, you know, marketing gurus out there with their TED Talks or their YouTube videos or whatever, kind of, it's snake oil in a sense. You need something good and clear, don't get me wrong. But there's no magic. There's no magic dust. It just doesn't exist. You're building a business step by step. And consistency is going to way outrank a clever logo, you know, round or square edges. And I think that's what you're saying. Your customer experience, yeah. Just being consistent.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a mate of mine who heads up marketing and digital for a large fundraising organization. And he was saying that the key to his success in a whole range of contexts on digital is not about having the best brand or doing one thing well. It's about doing all of the small things consistently well and not having a break in the chain, and making sure that you incrementally and consistently working on all of those small things. And that will make the difference. And that's what has made the difference for him. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. You can get hung up on having the best campaign or the best PR or media exposure. And sometimes you get lucky. You happen to get a story or a message that resonates and is picked up and just runs rampantly. But that's very hard to control.
Yeah, it's bottling lightning. You can't build your business that way.
No, and you will lose sleep over trying to do it that way.
Yeah. Your first thing statement here was about to grow a brand was about your product and your service and just making sure that's right. And it's so important that potentially your marketing efforts should just be simple and consistent while you get your product right. I do get people coming to me from time to time looking for marketing as a solution to their business's problems. And there's a somewhat impolite saying about putting lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
And if your product is a pig, no amount of lipstick and prettying it up is going to make it saleable. You've got to get your product right first. We're not magicians and we form one of maybe five functions in your business, and we can get that bit right. But if the product, the operations of your business is not right, we can't help. It's really not going to make any difference. In fact, it might hurt.
Yeah, there's a great way to test that for small business. You know, if you don't have your product right, or you think you do but you're not sure, is can you get a testimonial or do a case study with a customer who's happy to put their name to that case study. You're activating you're supporting, augmenting word of mouth referrals with that testimonial, with that case study. But if you feel sick at the thought of asking somebody for a case study, right, or when you do ask them, they don't respond to the email. When you call them, they go, "Oh, I'm not sure that we can do that," or "I'm not going to have permission," or we, you know, they're coming up with excuses, then you've got a product problem. and get that fixed. You're still not solving. There's something wrong in what you're doing with your product or your service. So go and focus on that.
And if your marketing works and brings you in a load of new business, you've created yourself a major problem with customers being unhappy and potential refunds and brand damage, not brand lift. Maybe you've done some brand damage.
Exactly. You've just yeah, I completely agree with that, particularly in service delivery and care organizations. If your customers are coming in but leaving or unhappy, then you're not getting any word of mouth referrals, but you've just got a bigger problem because you are not going to be able to maintain the level of sales and support and customers that you need, because they're going to be going out the back door.
Yes, you're just better off staying a bit smaller for a while and getting your product sorted.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned using external agencies. Obviously, we're an agency, so that's our business. But you've also worked with internal teams. What would be your advice around, you know, insourcing versus outsourcing?
Yeah. This one is always a challenge and you wrestle with, and you can swings and roundabouts in what you should and shouldn't do. And I think it depends on the size of the organization, the skill sets that you've got internally. When you have an internal team, then you can feel a greater level of control, but you can also end up having to invest a whole bunch of additional time in managing those people and building team and dealing with emotions and trying to get outcomes from those people, performance management. It can all be messy and tricky. At the same time, in dealing with an agency, you can give them a task to do that you're not really clear about yourself. They don't deliver on the outcome and you're going, well, I could have done it myself. and you can be, you know, or which strategy do I do and which one is going to work for me better? And I think both require, whether it's internal teams or external teams, it's being very clear. If you're working with an agency, then what specifically are they good at and what specifically do you need from them? Are you really clear in terms of outcomes? And do you have a relationship with them that you can adjust outcomes and tweak things as you go? Because whether you're working internally or externally, there's a level of experimentation until you are generating the outcomes that you need. And you don't know that to begin with when you're starting either with new staff or with an agency.
Yeah.
I think it's particularly challenging. Branding and messaging is really tough. Internally or externally. And I think doing the hard work yourself to understand and wrestle and sit with your own identity is really important even before you talk with an agency. I think on the internal side, then the making sure that the people that you are choosing to work with have demonstrated that they've delivered in the past, and then that they're a great fit
culturally.
You know, from a bit culturally. If you don't have those two things, all of the other things aren't going to matter.
Yeah.
So I think choosing an agency that you trust, that you can work with from a relationship perspective, and that you have done the work yourself to know what you need and you want. So that you can actually communicate that to the agency so that they can help you. Because otherwise they're going to not be able to help you. You're going to feel frustrated and not get the outcomes that you need.
You're actually saying that you as the business owner or as the marketing executive need to own the part that you need to own. And that is the overall direction. And it's the values, and it might be the marketing and branding and your unique space.
Yeah, good attempt to clarify what I was trying to say there, but I think you're right. It's when we mentioned before doing the hard work about how many sales do you actually need and why? What are your targets are? If you don't know what those things are before you talk to a marketing agency, or if you don't understand what your brand is or your unique identity is, it's going to take a lot of work for the agency to figure that out. And they're not you, and they're working with multiple different clients, and they're trying to reflect and capture what you're saying. But you need to do the work yourself first to understand some of those things, or be prepared if you are working with an agency that it's going to take time to get that right. And they may not get it right the first time or the second time because they're not you. They're not living inside your organization day to day and getting all of that feedback from staff and customers about who you are.
Yeah, and potentially if you're not clear on that and you hire someone, well, they're going to struggle to figure that out too. Now, maybe they get there a bit closer, quicker because they're spending 40 yeah. hours a week instead of, you know, a fraction of that, and they're living in the organization. But again, it's your leadership around what that looks like. Yeah. And essentially you're saying, what is it I want? What's the outcome I want? Data-wise as well. Because otherwise you can't measure success.
Yeah.
And then it's just going to be looking at your, you know, the skills inside your organization saying, we do have this, but we don't have that, so I should fill that gap and that gap. And ultimately, if you're smart about that, an agency can be cheaper because you might be paying for 5 hours a month of someone's skill then instead of hiring someone full-time.
That is 100% correct. And I think particularly when you're expanding out into new areas, and I think you've even said to me this in the past, James, is that sometimes an agency can be, you might have a customer for a period of time until they outgrow you because they've developed a whole bunch of success and now feel confident about employing somebody full time to take responsibility for that area. And as an agency, you go and move and solve another problem, and you bring help that organization do something new that they haven't done before. So agencies can, in particularly with small organizations, can play very important roles in filling in allowing you to start something that you haven't done before, and bringing some knowledge and expertise until you feel like you understand and know what you need to do. Yeah. And that, well, maybe now there's some cost efficiency in employing somebody to take that forward, and the agency plays a different role and is helping you achieve something else.
Yeah, cool. All right. If my last question, if you could speak to yourself 10 years ago, what advice would you give to you? 10 years younger, Mike.
Yeah, I think that... the advice around those four things about understanding who you are, what your product is, who your customers are, what your market is, and then figuring out how many customers you need just stops the overwhelm in terms of it's a big market. I've got to deliver in so many areas. There's so many people to sort out. Everyone wants lots of things. It's complicated. There's so many... Marketing's getting so broad in terms of strategies and tactics and specialities. It's all overwhelming. But when you simplify it down to those few things, it's much more manageable. And it allows you to stay sane. I think...
It's helpful.
And I think the being really, really clear on those outcomes with... You know, if you're a CMO or if you've just stepped into that role, making sure that the business is clear on its objectives and what its targets are, they're not clear. They just say, oh, we just need...
just want to grow.
Yeah, exactly. We'll help them figure that out.
Yep.
Just do not relent. Do not give up on making sure that you're clear on what those things are, because they're not going to be able to evaluate whether you've been successful or not in supporting them. You've got to get down to that number.
Well, that's terrific advice, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I hope people that have been listening have learnt loads from your wealth of knowledge.
Hey, thank you, James. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, I hope you found today's episode informative. I know that most businesses struggle with digital marketing, and that's why we've developed a process over the past 10 years to put together robust and holistic digital marketing strategies to help your business grow. So if you need help with your digital marketing, just Google The Online Co and click the red button to book a quick chat. We'd love to speak with you to see how we can help. Take care.